Welcome to Rough Drafts, How God Writes His Love in Our Stories, a podcast that explores the faith journeys of our friends and neighbors in Burns, Tennessee. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this podcast, we'll hear powerful and inspiring stories of how God works in the ordinary lives of people like you and me. Our stories are unfinished and perfectly imperfect. They are just rough drafts, a glimpse of what is to come because God is still at work, writing plot twists, introducing new characters, and bringing good even from the most challenging circumstances. Join us as we see what God is up to in our stories. Here's your host, Matthew Hyatt.
Thanks for joining us today, friends. This is an on-location episode of Rough Drafts. This is a really fun place to be. I'll give you some hints and see if you can figure out where I am. I'm surrounded by a timeline of scripture, by the Ark of the Covenant, the tabernacle, a sarcophagus, and Noah's Ark. Evidently, there's an Ark thing going on in here. And this is giving me some real throwback vibes to eighth grade, because I'm sitting in the room with my eighth grade Bible teacher from Lipscomb. Don't tell anyone we're a Nashville Christian, though. It's Coach Mike McPherson. Mike, welcome.
I appreciate it, Matthew. Yeah, I think you were my student back in the 60s, it seems like.
1860s.
Yeah, it seems like it.
It's been a minute. Those were some good times.
I've talked to a lot of people from those days, and we've called it the golden age at Lipscomb. It was so fun. The middle school faculty was a great team, and every day was fun. We had chapel every day. A lot of people think that would be a little laborious, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
The whole school was together once a day, every day, and I just have nothing but great memories from back in those days.
Eighth grade was one of my favorite years of school. Betsy Piper, John Green.
Right.
Shoot, I can see those classrooms in my head. I've tried real hard not to go back to that place, but you know, it was just super special. And you were always one. You've spoken at our church camps over the years, and you've got a lot of story. And you're going to come speak for us at Burns here sometime soon about some pieces of that story. So we're not going to tell the whole story right now, but do you mind giving us a glimpse of the stories you're going to tell?
Yeah, and if hopefully when I come out, we'll do two lessons. One will be on my journey with depression, which was very debilitating back in 04. And I'm very outspoken about that because I'm trying to remove the stigma of mental illness, because a lot of people think it is some type of faulty faith or that you're just not a strong person, and it has nothing to do with the strength of your faith or your character.
Absolutely.
So I'm very outspoken on that, and I take you through that journey.
You were the first minister I ever remember hearing talk about that.
Right, and I'm one of the first I've heard myself.
Yeah.
And I was very mad at God at the time, but I now see why he allowed that, because he knew I would get up and talk.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to share, as my wife said, the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yeah.
And then the other presentation, we will talk about the journey my wife and I went on with ALS, and I lost her 6.5 years ago. She was diagnosed back in 2016, and then about a year and a half later, I lost her. And so it sounds like both of those presentations will be depressing, especially the one on depression.
Yeah.
But they're not. They're both very informative. And the one with Lisa, it does not end on a downer.
Yeah.
It ends, I think people will be very inspired by her. I've been asked to present it all over the place. It's not an easy one. I don't particularly like delivering it. I'd rather talk about Noah's Ark or my trips to the Holy Land, but it is so highly requested, and I know she would want me to do it. So we'll come out and tell that journey, and I've just found it to be very inspiring for people. Not my presentation, but her courage.
Yeah.
Is what makes my presentation effective.
Absolutely. And just being willing to say, this sucked.
Yep.
I mean, I think sometimes we've kind of come to church and we have to sing and be happy. And sometimes we've almost felt like we've had to put on a show for people.
Yeah. And I'm not happy, really. I mean, I have a lot of happy moments. I coach my grandchildren in basketball. I enjoy teaching. I just got back from Italy. I've been to Saudi Arabia, Middle East. We've been down to what we think is the original Mount Sinai. I've been to the Noah's Ark site in the mountains of Ararat. So I've had a lot of great things that have happened since I lost her, but it is all tempered with her not being with me anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm not the Coach McPherson that you knew back in the day. I am different. I'm not the same, but that's okay. I had a great life, and I'm going to continue moving forward and going on. I don't feel like there's a choice. I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
But it is a very open discussion, and I guarantee you, Matthew, there will be people standing in line to come and talk to me about their story after I finish up at Burns.
Well, the original idea was I wanted you to tell that story on this podcast, and then you kind of reached back out and said, hey, here's some good that has happened. And so I'm excited to get you to Burns to tell that story for everybody there to hear, and we'll connect those things. So there will be a link from this to that and a link from that to this. But you mentioned that in your experience, a lot of people have tried to be helpful, and they have not always succeeded.
Right, yeah. And that's kind of what maybe we could deal with here. And I'll start with one of the worst ones that happened right after her passing. And as I give some of these examples, some of you listening out there will have made some of these mistakes. That's okay. You meant well. Just learn from that. But here was one of the first ones. She dies on a Thursday. So Sunday, I'm still going to go to church. In fact, I'm going to teach a class.
Oh, wow.
And the only reason I'm going to teach it is we got to know two people from England in our journey in taking her to Thailand to get stem cell treatments. We met this couple. We went and visited them. The man had ALS. He then passed. So the wife has come over to visit with Lisa.
Oh, wow.
Well, Lisa dies before she gets here. She's going to be here by Sunday. I want her to hear a Christian perspective of Lisa's life.
Yeah. Okay.
So I feel like I have to speak Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't want to. It's going to be tough. No normal person would do that, but this is a special deal.
I've never accused you of being normal.
I'm usually abnormal. So I go out to jog that morning before. I got up real early before church. And I remember when I went out the door, I remember thinking, I hope a neighbor sees me so I can have somebody to jog with. Hmm. And lo and behold, someone sees me that I actually used to go to church with. And I went, oh my goodness, this is just what I asked for.
Yeah.
So we're going along. And again, this person loves me. He loves me. He cares. He means well. Yeah. And he said, Mike, it wasn't meant for Lisa to live a long life. You just got to accept it and move on. Well, you know, that's true. You don't say that when your wife has just been taken to the morgue a few days earlier.
Did you hit the guy?
Yeah. You know, I remember in the midst of my grief, I didn't laugh. I can now.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking the old South expression, bless your heart. Bless your heart. What is the deal here? And so, you know, We really need to temper what we're about to say.
Yeah.
Within 3 months, another friend of mine, a girl that I grew up with when we were in middle school and high school and elementary school, and she said, Mike, I'm so sorry to hear about Lisa's passing. She said, maybe you'll find someone else. Well, I know people find someone else. That's great.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not thinking about dating right here. I mean, I just lost the best person I've ever known, my girlfriend for 36 years, and I've had more than one person say, well, maybe there's somebody else out there. And that's not on my agenda.
Well, you know, we learned that when young. Somebody told me that when your kid's goldfish dies, the next thing you do is you go get them a new goldfish.
Yeah.
And that works pretty good for goldfish, but it's a whole lot harder on grandmas because you can't go to Walmart and bring home a new grandma.
And the goldfish look a little similar.
That's right.
And the grandmamas don't. But we have people that will say in crisis situations, especially at funerals, I know how you feel or I understand. Well, No, you don't.
Yeah.
And for example, here's someone that's been married 70 years, 60 years. If they were to say to me, oh, I lost my spouse after 60 years, Mike, I know how you feel. No, I had mine for 36.
Yeah.
That would be like me saying to someone that had theirs for 10 years, oh, I know how you feel. Mm-hmm. Because the earlier you lose them, the worse it is.
Yeah.
And nobody's situation is the same. And I can have sympathy and empathy for someone who's lost a spouse, but every situation is different because some people have lost a spouse and they were never really close to them.
Yeah.
And so for me to say, I know how you feel, they may be thinking, no, you don't. I'm not all that upset that it happened.
It took too long.
So we have to be careful there.
Yeah, I know how you feel. I love what people are trying when they say, I know how you feel. But Mike, I've heard an awful lot of versions that are, I know how you feel. I lost a puppy once. Like, oh, no. This is, you know.
I had
know
that.
How you feel, and you don't.
I had this many times with people say, oh, I was so close to my grandmother. I know how you feel. Listen, I've lost my grandmother.
Yeah.
It's not the same as losing your spouse. I don't care how close you are. It's a different relational situation.
Yeah.
And that there is the rawness of the loss that is similar.
Right.
But
pain is pain.
Yeah. Pain is pain and it's yours. But you can't parallel things like that. Now, from my end, I can say to people that have lost a child or been through a divorce, and I mean this, I believe that's tougher than what I went through. Yeah. I didn't have to bury a child. It's just different. And I think we have to look at it that way. I think a divorce is tougher than my situation because in a divorce, you're probably mad at the person,
yeah,
especially if you weren't the one that was at fault. I'm not mad at Lisa. I'm just missing her. In divorce, there, in some ways, there's not closure as long as that person's alive. But yet with Lisa, I did have closure. She's gone. She lived a great life, and I had a great time with her.
You know, with divorce, there's a big wedding ceremony, right?
Yeah.
And when you lose someone, there's a funeral ceremony. But divorce, I think we need to invent a divorce ceremony.
You know, it's a great thought. You know, and
to visualize it and give closure and give people a place to grieve it in.
And you saying that just made me think of if, like I have all the pictures up that I did have when Lisa was alive.
Yeah.
They're still there of a wedding, whatever. If I'm divorced, I'm not leaving those pictures up.
Right.
And so that's why I think I can say safely and accurately, that's worse than what I went through.
Yeah.
So I do keep my loss in perspective without taking away from the horror of it. But just another one, people say it will get easier. Well, it hasn't. And I know what people mean by that. They mean you're not going to be breaking down and crying every minute in the future, and that's true.
Right.
I don't break down every single minute, but you still have those emotional times when you hear that certain song.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I went to Kroger's to shop for food after she had died. I had never been in Kroger's unmarried for the last 36 years.
Yeah.
And that shopping was different.
It is
different. The first time I filled out a form at a doctor office that said marital status. Oh, wow. And I had to check widower.
Yeah.
And those things hit you and you don't know they're coming out of nowhere.
And those are words that belong to, you know, widower. That's that old guy at church.
That's the old guy. They got married 70 years. He's all right. Yeah. It's for the best. She's not suffering. She's in a better place. All of those are accurate statements. You don't say them.
Just because
you don't say
it doesn't mean it's helpful.
You don't say them. Look to the future. Everything will be all right. Here's another one. Time heals all wounds. Now let's think about that one.
Yeah.
Let's think about if your child was kidnapped and murdered, is time ever going to heal that wound? Well, no.
Yeah.
So time doesn't heal all wounds. Time can make survival a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I'm not breaking down. I know people that have lost children tragically, and they're able to make it through the day or the week or the month, but they're not healed.
No.
They're able to function. And that, I think people parallel the fact that they're, you know, they're doing so good. Well, am I doing so good? I don't know. I don't feel great. I'm not falling apart. I can do my jobs. I'm busy, but I'm emotionally bored.
Yeah.
I'm not physically bored. I have a busy schedule. But when I go home, Lisa's not there. I don't have anyone to bounce off anything.
The house is quiet.
I have this little modest home in Grave Hall.
Yeah.
It feels like an empty mansion.
Yeah.
It feels like it echoes in there when I walk in. Here's another one. God's will.
Hmm.
Well, you know, when we look at the providence of God, we have to admit, and so we'll get a little scriptural textual here, everything that happens is permitted by God, because he could stop anything he wanted.
Right.
He could set something up any way he wanted. So I would have to admit cautiously here that God permitted Lisa to die. He could have stopped it. He knew in eternity past she was going to get ALS. So he didn't. But when we say God's will that way, in that circumstance, when a person is still raw, it's almost saying that God set it up for them to die, but it's going to be okay.
It almost sounds like he's happy about it.
It is. He's fine. God's fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, as an example, the devil was not blasted by God. We all wonder, why didn't he just annihilate Satan right then?
Yeah.
So, yes, it was in God's plan, but I don't know about saying, it's God's will that the devil is still hitting us. You know,
Yeah.
It is within his permission and permissive will, but still, there are things that might be accurate to say that doesn't mean they need to be said.
Yes. Just because these jeans make my butt look big, you don't have to tell
me. Yeah. You know? And one thing I have seen, that sometimes we try to straighten out people's theology during crisis.
No, don't do it.
You can't do it. And one of those is, for me, I don't believe the deceased can see us.
Yeah.
To me, it doesn't make theological sense that Lisa is up there with the Lord in a perfect situation, and she looks down here and sees me crying. Or she looks down here and sees me doing something wrong. That doesn't make sense to me. What if you're in heaven with the Lord and you see, and you have a loved one and you're watching 9/11 happen?
Yeah.
So it's never made sense to me. But when I go to somebody to hug them at the funeral and they say, well, I know she's looking down on me now, I don't correct their theology.
No.
Now, I do have the right to correct it when they throw it at me. I've had many people say, at least Lisa's looking down on you. And I will go, I hope not.
Yeah.
I don't want her to.
Yeah.
So you sometimes have the right to correct it if they're throwing it at you.
Okay.
But the other end.
That concept, I saw somebody who did this talk, and I wish I could remember who it was, but they talked about circles of pain.
Yes.
And they said that, you know, for example, you're the person who gets cancer. You're the center of the circle. That's hard on you. It's also hard on your family. They're one circle outside of you.
Right.
Right. It's also hard on your coworkers. They don't like you quite as much as your family did. They're not dealing with the everyday thing, but they miss you being in the, you know, and there's further circles as you get further out. They said it's always okay for somebody in the center of the circle to complain out, but it's never okay for people on the outside of the circle to complain in. And, you know, I don't need to complain to the person I'm caring for about how hard it is to care for them.
Right.
And I think the same thing is kind of true with theological corrective.
Right.
Like if the person in the middle is a little bit heretical, I think God gives them the space to be.
Exactly. And for me to say to someone about my wife's death, for me to say, she's not suffering, she's in a better place, that's okay.
Yeah.
But for someone outside that circle to
say that to you,
they don't have that right. And they just need to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I miss, or I know you miss them, and or I'm here, whatever. Another one is God must have needed them. God must have needed her.
Oh, I hate that one.
Who in the world does God need? And this has really messed up some children.
Yes.
When they say, well, God took your mommy. He needed her better. He needed her.
Can the God of the universe not make another one?
Yeah. God needed her to work in the garden. And so that is tragic. That is some theology I do correct.
Yeah.
Because that to say that God took your mother, that can really mess a child up.
Yeah.
For life. This has happened. A widow was told at a funeral, God only takes the good ones. Well, what does that say about the rest of us?
I have always heard only the good die young.
Only the good die young. And I'm going, no.
Well, it looks like I'm going to live forever, Mike.
What is that? You know, we heard that song in the 70s. Yeah. And now we think that's scripture.
That means Hitler lives forever, right?
God doesn't give us more than we can handle. That's not in the Bible.
Man, and you know, what stinks about some of these, there's kernels of truth, right? There's the 1 Corinthians thing that you're not tempted beyond what you can bear, but God provides in us. That's not the same sentence. They sound alike, but they're not the same. In understanding that God is going to be faithful through this thing is different than saying, oh, you've got this, you know.
Exactly. And everyone does this with the best intentions.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard now on the reverse where a person loses a child, God needed another little angel. And I've heard of people that had miscarriages, and the girl or the wife was told, or the mom was told, at least you didn't get attached. You can have another one. Those have all been shared with me.
Yeah, I've heard
before, and it's just. Let me read this. This is from a guy named Kenneth Hawk, and he wrote a book called Don't Sing Songs to a Heavy Heart. And here's what he said. With the best of intentions, we can add to one's burden by trying to cheer them up with pithy platitudes of sunny phrases. By making people feel that Christians are supposed to be happy all the time, pressures people into a false cheerfulness. I thought that was pretty heavy and pretty accurate.
And you think about the consequences of that. If that's the view of the church or the circle or whatever, if Christians are happy all the time and I'm not happy, does that mean I'm not
a Christian? Faith is deficient.
And so great, not only do I feel grief, now I feel guilt and now I feel shame. That really helped.
Yeah. Kenneth lost his wife after 34 years, and a friend called to say sorry. And this friend's wife had died after 64 years marriage. And so he had 31 years more than me. And to say, well, I know how you feel. You just don't know. He said, my wife died suddenly at age 58 from a brain aneurysm. And someone said, at least she was not in pain. And Kenneth says, I was with her for her last hours and she was hurting.
Yeah.
I just had not told anyone.
Yeah.
And so people, again, have the best intentions. Avoid saying, how are you? Well,
yeah, how do you answer that question?
Yeah, how can that be answered? Again, what the person means is, are you hanging in there and making it? Well, if they're standing up, I guess they are. But saying, how are you, is an unanswerable question because we're not doing okay. Nobody is.
And we have this script, right? When you see somebody in the church lobby, how you doing? Fine. How you doing? Fine.
Right, exactly.
Like, so sometimes if I'm actually trying to ask to see how someone is doing, sometimes I'll even say, what kind of day is this? Because I think since that uses different words, and Mike, tell me if I'm wrong, that's my way of trying to say, is this a harder day or is this an easier day or is this a, where are you?
I think that's good there. It's like, that is a more sensitive probe than, how you doing?
Yeah. Because we say, how you doing, without even thinking
right.
about it. And I had this lady at church. Yeah, I'm sure you had this version of her too, Woodson. But she, if you ever asked her how she was doing, she gave you the entire list of every function of her body. Like, you know, I knew when the last time she pooped was. I knew the consistency, the quality, and I'm not going to go further. Bless her heart, she's gone on to her reward. But what I learned about her was, I learned, don't ask how are you doing unless you were prepared for an answer.
Yeah.
And it was cool because that taught me to, I didn't walk in and say, how you doing today? And you didn't ask me that.
And but, she let you know.
Oh, good grief, she let you know.
And there's a lot of parts of those bodies that are not doing well.
Yeah, we learned a lot.
And Kenneth, in the book, he talks about it's often easier to give advice instead of allowing ourselves to be uncomfortable with someone else's feelings. Resist easy answers trying to offer solutions. You don't have to solve anything.
Yeah.
People, at that point, it really, they don't need to feel better at that point. We want them to feel better right then.
Right.
And that's an impossible psyche, mentally. You can't do that. And Kenneth says, when you lightly converse like that about with grieving and fearful and suffering people, and they're deeply wounded, it looks like that pain needs to be glossed over. Let's move on to the solution, the remedy.
Sometimes it's more about the comfort of the person asking the question than the person being asked.
If that's still on the air there, that's our bell there for class change.
He was actually a mic getting bleeped.
Yeah, that's right.
He got real mad at me.
Got a little rough there for a second. Keep a stiff upper lip. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. This too shall pass.
Like a kidney stone.
Yeah, exactly. it's foolish chatter, and it's telling that person you really don't understand, and they can't believe how calloused, immature, insensitive, and really rude you are in their greatest hour. And they actually can't wait for you to leave.
Yeah.
And I remember when we'll probably share this at the church service with class or whatever, when I was in the throes of my depression, the one place I went in public was to the basketball games that I could no longer coach. All I could do was sit on the bench, watch the game, get back in the car, or Lisa take me home. So one of the parents before the game saw me in the hallway and said, "Hey, Coach, I'm so sorry about your depression. Our preacher had that too, and he killed himself. I'm just so sorry."
Golly.
And again, when he said that, it was bless your heart. And then I thought, I'm glad you didn't go into counseling.
Yeah, seriously.
Bless your heart. And again, this guy loved me. He cared about
me. He meant well.
Totally.
And we're poking fun at some of this stuff, but you knew what they meant.
Right. And the thing is, those of you out there, if you have felt guilt over some of the things we've said, don't do that. Just correct yourself. And let me give you some things to say.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
I'm sorry for your loss. I wish I had the right words. I don't know how you feel, but I'm here to help. You're in my prayers. And here's another thing people like. And sometimes this, he also wrote another book, Kenneth did, about after the flowers have faded. And it's about how if someone loses someone, they get all the attention at the funeral, and then we act like they never were married to the person.
Yeah.
Or never had that child.
Two weeks later, they want the cards and casseroles back. And
everything, quote, normal. And what I love to hear from people is a memory of Lisa that they share with me. But a lot of times we're afraid, we'll bring that up and it's too painful. For most of us, I love hearing, and I hear stories all the time that I did not know things she did. And that is good for me to say I'm just a phone call away. Sometimes give a hug and don't say anything. Mm. At the funeral, just hug them.
Yeah.
Don't say anything. And I think that's important. Now, this is an example of something of action where, you know, a lot of times we say, give me a call if I can do anything.
Yeah.
So this lady comes up to me and she says, Mike, everybody's going to come up to you and say, give me a call if you need me. I want to know something right now that I can do.
Yeah.
That will alleviate, relieve, do something.
Yeah.
And I said, can you call all the places that are still sending Lisa mail and get it discontinued.
Oh, yeah.
And this lady said, yep. So every time a magazine, anything that came in from Bed Bath & Beyond or anything that Lisa had subscribed to,
yeah,
anything, Lisa, thank you for your donation, please. And those are all tough reminders. Every time I got one, I took them to her. She called the corporation, the company, and said, my friend has lost his wife. You need to discontinue selling.
That's a huge gift. Because
it is major. It took a year.
And calling those people, I mean, even on it, I really need to call DirecTV today, and I've been putting it off for a month because I can think of very few things I like doing less than calling Comcast or whoever. But even more in a time of grief.
Talk about something off my shoulders. I don't have to sell that amount. Now, you still get occasional things because, you know, just general stuff comes in.
Right.
We hope you and Lisa will vote for blah, blah. You know, you can't stop all those things.
No, but you can slow it down.
And she almost has stopped it. And sometimes the company, the answering operator, whatever, would say, I'm sorry, Ms. McPherson will have to call and do that. And she'd say, he's not calling you. He's lost his wife. If you can't do it, I need to talk to your supervisor.
Yeah.
And they okay.
Yeah, I can do
that. And she's the kind of personality that can do that. And they knew it.
Yeah.
And she has a presence, and she shut them down.
That's so cool.
And it's not that those people were being unkind. It's that they felt like they needed legal authorization. But she had them jump the loophole there, and I appreciate that.
You know, when we came home from the hospital with our son, when Caleb was born, we spent a couple of days in NICU. In the grand scheme of things, everything was fine. But, you know, when you're a new parent, everything's scary. It's scary driving home. You know, I get to drive and there's a kid in the car. Like, where's the nurse?
Right.
But, yeah, the couple of days in NICU kind of amped that up. When I got home, somebody had mowed my yard for me. And that was just
major.
That will probably go down in my life as one of the biggest acts of kindness anyone's shown me, because
you just go ahead and do it.
Yeah. And they didn't call. They didn't ask. Look, I'm never going to be mad if you weed eat for me. I'm never going to say, man, I was sure hoping to get to weed eat this afternoon. I hoped I'd hit Yellow Jackets too.
You know, and that's a great example of you just go do it. You don't ask.
Yeah.
The first night that I knew I was going to have to spend the night without Lisa, she died in the afternoon. And I was dreading that first sleep without her. And even though she was in horrible pain, there's that part of you that still wants them around because they're still alive.
Yeah.
Even though they need to go on.
So many conflicting emotions.
It really is. And the next morning, a friend of mine had gotten my house. But coffee and bagels were on my cabinet.
Yeah.
I don't know how it got in. I didn't tell him where the key was, but it was there when I got up in the morning.
Yeah.
Just little things like that do mean a lot.
You know what's cool? I don't feel like I've ever been good at being thoughtful like that. I'm sorry. It just is what it is.
Me either. Me either.
We have this friend, Martha, and she is so good at, you know, in this age of DoorDash and Amazon Prime, my kids were sick. And the next day I came home and there was a get well pack of games for the kids.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I don't think it cost a whole lot, but it was.
It seems like women are so good at that. That's the type of stuff Lisa would do. And another thing that nobody will turn down is gift cards to a restaurant because they, you know, they always need food.
Yeah.
And they don't always feel like cooking. And so a gift card to go get something to eat is always convenient.
We've had ladies at church clean people's houses. Just say, hey, I'm coming
over. Lisa did that, yes.
I'm going to catch you up on laundry because, you know, your treadmill's getting full. So
right,
you got to bring it somewhere else. It's just amazing how simple it is. And, you know, in the book of Job, the friends did all right till they started talking. And
the old joke about God gave us one mouth and two ears for a reason, you know. And the Bible talks about being slow to speak.
Yeah.
And we just need to quit offering quick solutions when there's not even a solution to be had. Just your presence. People are going to remember that you showed up at the funeral home or you showed up at their house, not what you said.
Yeah.
They're going to remember what you said if it's inappropriate.
Right.
So don't become part of their memory.
Don't be a statistic.
I have some funny statistics, and they meant well, but I guess there's the part of me, again, I kind of look at it like, maybe it's good it happened so I can share it. I'm kind of that person. I don't get my feelings hurt. None of those situations hurt my feelings. They would some people because of their makeup. But you know me, I'm a coach. I'm used to people not liking me and saying stuff.
People can yell at you.
Yeah, I'm used to that. So my feelings were never hurt. It was just, oh my, you need a little counseling here. You need some guidance on what to say. And I went to a funeral after Lisa passed of a little bit older friend of mine that had lost his wife. And I'm getting ready to go over and sit down. And a little older friend of mine, another one, said, are you dating yet?
Because that's the best place for that.
And I said, well, I'm still grieving Lisa. I think he said, have you thought about it? And I said, well, I'm still grieving. He said, oh, I didn't mean now. But again, we're at a funeral. I've just lost Lisa, and he wants me to be on the dating game.
He's like, hey, somebody's available now.
Yeah, you know? Hey, there could be several in here. But anyway, that's kind of the gist of my wisdom and knowledge here.
Well, man, I look forward to you coming and sharing a little bit more about the story of what worked, what didn't, how you got where you got. And let's open up this stuff and let's talk about it, because that helps.
I appreciate it. And anybody that's listening that's a member of Charles Church, invite somebody that you know that needs to hear a story about an experience about depression or loss, grief. And it won't be a downer. I promise that both lessons will be uplifting. I use a lot of humor in both of them. And that's easy for me to do, in spite of the fact that I had a debilitating depression that I thought was going to take me out.
Yeah.
And I lost my best friend. I will bring humor in. You will laugh some. And several people cry some.
Yeah, that's okay.
Because it is touching. Her story is very touching. And I miss her all the time, but talking about her life does make me feel better, because she's still touching people even after she's gone. And everybody that knows her knew this would happen, that she keeps on teaching.
Absolutely.
And you will get to know this wonderful person that I was crazy about. I'm still in love with her.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything else you want to say today?
I'm looking forward to being up at Burns, and it's always a great place to come and visit. I love that part of the world, too.
It's scenic Burns.
That's right.
That's right.
Downtown.
Well, friends, thanks for listening today. You know where to find the podcast, and I hope that you will share this with a friend and maybe invite somebody to hear a little bit more of this story. And maybe before I meet you again, you can find some really horribly insensitive things to say at a funeral. That's a good plan. Have a good week. Until next time, I can't wait to hear what God does in your story.
Thanks for listening to Rough Drafts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, help us spread the word by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, let's keep looking for how God writes His love into our stories.